Hello and welcome to a football podcast. My name is Devang Desai and I'm joined by the usual suspects, David Goss and Nick Andrade. This week we chat with New England Revolution midfielder Lee Nguyen, talk MLS playoffs and break down all the matchups, plus answer all your questions on the mailbag with Ask AFP. Gentlemen, how are we doing?
This is a special episode, guys. It's a live watch along with the U.S. national team game playing against Panama. The U.S. scored one goal in 2020, so if they score again, you guys might know exactly when we're recording and where we're at, because I don't know that I'll be able to contain a reaction. Although Tim Ream's captain right now, so I'm trying to disassociate my connection so that I don't feel as hurt when this goes wrong.
Based on the reactions to a 0-0 draw against Wales, I thought you guys won the 2026 World Cup already, de facto.
Facts. Greatest country in the world, baby. Red, white, and blue.
So that's international sauce. Couldn't score a goal against Wales. You love to see it, but no, there are some very good players on that U.S. team. There is no lie about it. And it's troubling as an outsider, I'll say that.
Are any of them playing right now, David?
Do you want me to do the thing where I read all where all the clubs, where all the American players that are on the field play?
Yes.
Are any of them on the field right now? Zach Steffen, starting goalkeeper right now. Manchester City, ever heard of it? Serginho Dest, starting left back. Barcelona, ever heard of them? Who else? Reggie Cannon, right back. Boa Vista, actually, have you ever heard of them? Because that yes, is a team as well. Sucks. Yeah, Gio Reyna's on the field. Weston McKennie, Juve, duh. Tyler Adams, who I think is the best player in the pool. RB Leipzig, starting central midfield. And Yunus Musa as well. Valencia.
So how are they not winning 10-0 right now? What's going on?
Well, so they started Sebastian Legette as a false nine in the last game, which made things a little bit harder because he's like an okay MLS 10 playing as a false nine for the first time in his career. And then the other thing is they've literally never met each other before, because one of the things is, okay, 2020 happened and they're all really young, but they're also all really young and didn't come through like youth groups together. So it's not like Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie had never really played before. Yunus Musa has, I don't know if he's been to the U.S. and since he was a child or met any of these players. So it's going to take some time, but they dominated Wales. Yeah, they didn't score and it was a bad Wales team, but I don't think the U.S. has gone to Europe and dominated any opponent since like Slovenia in 2013.
Well, it's about time, David. They need to do it.
Red, white, and blue.
Miss me with this big club talk. Until you have a starting player from the second division of Sweden in your national team lineup, then we don't need to really start a discussion. Real heads know, Canada soccer, not far removed from those days. But the international break happened. I thought the Scotland qualification was definitely the coolest thing I saw. The reactions, beating Serbia on pens. Listen, I watched Scotland play some awful games in this qualifying run, and I felt like they owed it to me to get through there and make it to Euros. So to see them come through on the penalties, see Kieran Tierney happy, to see Stephen Caldwell happy, friend of the show, was awesome. But overall, the fact that this happened, this international break, God, we've said it before, but priorities, et cetera, et cetera. Half the players don't know how important the Nations League is or what it means. I saw Jamie Carragher call it semi-competitive. I don't know if we should risk traveling all across the world for stuff like this.
It's wild because you've got teams playing in multiple competitions in one window. So it's like they're playing like UEFA Euro qualifiers and then they're playing a Nations League game. I think that AFCON and I think World Cup qualifying are both happening in Africa at the same time. I can't even tell. That's how confusing this whole thing is. So I agree with you. Although I would say there's actually been, I think the games have been better than they were last window and the window this summer. Agreed. So I think the groups have been back a little bit more. Argentina, I watched Argentina, Paraguay. That was a decent game. And I would say Italy played well. France has been a train wreck, which is pretty fun to watch. Guess, I don't know if you know this, but Finland beat France in France last week, and the captain of the Finland team was MLS legend Rasmus Schuler. Wow. That is a thing.
Is Robin Lode on that team?
Yeah, he scored not in that game, but the following game.
And Lapalainen?
Lapalainen is out with an injury, and now he's out for the year. RIP Lapalainen.
I was watching highlights for the Nation Leagues yesterday, and like, them explaining how these teams move on or if they're moving on was the most confusing thing.
Yeah. They barely know. I think there's a 60% absorption rate on the rules of what's going on. the AFCON stuff, like Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has taken to Twitter just roasting the African Federation. I think the Gabon team was stuck at an airport in Gambia ahead of their qualifier today, which they lost. Shocker, because they were stuck in an airport for 6 hours waiting to get out of it. Probably gamesmanship on behalf of the Gambian government, because it seems like this was like an admin thing, but just overall, I mean, I'm looking forward to Sunday in that Arsenal game, and I'm like, Pierre is going to have an awful travel time back. And just the MLS aspect is also huge, which we will get to in depth, but there's going to be some big players missing for the first round of the playoffs.
Yeah, it sucks, and it sucks because you'd think, and I get it from the team point of view, it's a competitive game, you want your guys, but you'd think this would be the one time that an MLS team, and this isn't for the world, right? Because everyone has this. An MLS team would say, hey, it's the playoffs. Like, it's a single elimination competition coming up. After this, we probably don't have a game till next April. So, like, you can do whatever you want after this one game. Can we keep the best players on our team? Diego Rossi, the Golden Boot winner. Raul Ruiz Diaz, although it sounds like he'll be back. Rodolfo Pizarro played 7 minutes for Mexico off the bench against South Korea, and he might miss Inter Miami's playoff game if he plays, if he stays, and you'd hope he'd play in this second game. But like, if he doesn't start, if I'm Miami, like, what are you doing? So it's not ideal.
Guys, I don't want to bring up Liverpool again because I clearly only bring up them all the time, which I'm sorry, but the international break, we lost Joe Gomez, Jordan Henderson, and Mo Salah. This is the worst part of my life this week.
Mo Salah and the diagnosis was all bungled on the Egyptian FA, put it out on Twitter and deleted and just...
Well, he went to a wedding, so that's his fault, I think.
Just to put a cross the T on my point, that Mexico-South Korea friendly was played in Austria. Why are we bringing all these players across the... Like, I just... They're doing it for logistics reasons, but the logistics solution was to not do it. But again, we lost out in this tug of war of rationality, and they happened. Jack Grealish is apparently the best player in England, which I think is my takeaway from watching the games, which I kind of love. I love that.
I see a lot of people asking who his South American relatives are.
That sauce FC.
With the way he did things, which I thought was funny.
It eased the pain of that Arsenal masterclass he registered as well. But it's not only the fact that he stayed with Villa, I think that was important, obviously, but it's opening some eyes if they weren't already wide open to the fact that Gareth Southgate should not be in that job. But I don't think I'll find many people against me, at least not in this room.
No, I agree 100%. He's the wrong man for the job.
But I would assume England, well, I don't know, actually, but there'd be a chunk of England fans who, based off their performance at the last World Cup, which to some of them was unexpected. Jesus, the U.S. just went down 1-0 against Panama.
Goal! Golazo! Armando Cooper, baby!
God damn it.
All right. On that wonderful note, let me remind you folks that we're on Patreon and we want to welcome Will for joining us to get on this band. He might be a USMNT fan, Will. We apologize for this early adversity. We're getting closer to our goal of 30 patrons. Once we get there, more interviews featuring players, execs, and everyone else involved in MLS, CPL, and the international world of soccer will be available to you, including more soccer packs from different World Cups, different competitions. We've opened up the floor on our Discord, so get your requests in there for what packs you want to see. Also, another big plus, you get this podcast ad-free and you join in on the conversation at our Discord. So head on over to patreon.com/afootballpodcast and join today. When we come back after the break, we chat with Revs midfielder Lee Nguyen about the playoff game against Montreal. Welcome back to A Football Podcast. This week, we're joined by New England Revolution midfielder Lee Nguyen ahead of the MLS playoffs. Lee, first of all, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Appreciate you guys having me.
Lee, it's been obviously a very different 2020, but you've been in this league a while. I just wanted to ask you right off the top, just how strange has this year been for you as a player?
Yeah, it's been wild for sure. This was definitely unorthodox from any other season that I've been a part of. And so I think for me, like for a lot of guys mentally, it was just trying to stick with it and be hopeful and be positive. You know, that we were ever going to be able to finish the season and have a season. And, you know, it was weeks and months of a very tough stretch of just training on your own, being hopeful that there was going to be a season. And we're thankful that we were able to, you know, find a way to finish it out. And, you know, I think they've done a great job to be able to set it up to where we're able to have a playoff and a platform to finish out the season now. So I think it's great.
I respect the staying in shape because I quote unquote ran for the first 3 months of quarantine. So I only put on like 15, 20 pounds. So I can understand the waiting and going for the players.
Oh man. Yeah. Yeah. It was definitely a tough quarantine stretch. Just having to work out on your own, trying to figure out how to stay in shape and so that you can be competitive when we get back. Cause you know, like there wasn't going to be a lot of time in preparation. You know, having two preseasons essentially this year. And then having to go and play, you know, 3 to 5 games in the bubble, being stuck in what people would call a luxury prison. doing the same thing over and over and over, and not being able to do anything other than, you know, eat, sleep, football. And so we did what we had to get done, and now we're in the final stretch of this 2020 season. And honestly, looking at it now, it flew by, but it was definitely some hard times for sure this year.
Yeah, Thanksgiving's in like a week and it feels like it's still 2019 in all the insanity. One of the things I find interesting coming into this is you guys haven't had any play and then rest because it's been games packed in, like you talked about, MLS is back and now midweeks and everything. And now the playoffs are coming and that's why we want to have you on to talk. But you had some time now off to prepare for a game, actually, to build out how you want to play and to work as a group on the things you want to do. What's the last week or so been like? What does it feel like compared to other years preparing now to go into the postseason?
Yeah, it's been crazy. Like you said, we were so used to in the past couple months just playing a game every 3 days. And so preparation and training really was just recovery and doing what you can to get right for the next game. And there really wasn't much time. Training was quick and light, and so this past week and a half, being able to have a full week of training, and it was definitely different than what we were used to, just because, you know, you're able to, you know, do more, prepare more. Training was a little bit longer and more intense, and so it was good. And then you obviously have a week now to prep for one team as opposed to like a day, and so hopefully we're going to be prepared come Friday.
You guys have the play-in game on Friday against Montreal, like you mentioned, but these playoffs, single elimination, no crowds or limited crowds. So those higher seeds, though they might have fared better in the regular season, won't have that huge of an advantage. How do you see the playoffs kind of shaking out in that way, seeding-wise? It feels from the outside like it really is a bit more up in the air than previous years in terms of who can advance.
Yeah, I think, like you said, this year playoffs and having home field advantage, I don't think it's going to be that big of an advantage. We've had a pretty good record away from home, and you know, I look at teams from Canada, their home field is in New York. You know, so
it's close enough.
I think it's the. You know, where we play, whether we have to go away or go at home, and you know, it's not going to be as big of a home field advantage as in years past. And so, I think it's going to definitely be a good, you know, a good test to see how well you're going to be concentrated for the 90 minutes, because you're not going to have that extra 12th man motivation from the fans like you normally would, like until the, like the 80th, 90th minute of the game, where that does come into play. And so it'll be interesting to see.
So you mentioned a Canadian team. You guys start with Montreal in the play-in game. You've played them a couple times this year, had some success, but we talked about that extra training, that extra work. What's the focus against the Montreal Impact? What is it that the Revs, you know, have to do, want to do to try and win this first round?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think we're pretty confident going into this game. We've seen a lot of them this year, and we fared well. But we do know that in the playoffs, it's a different beast. You know, I think a lot of guys have experiences with that, you know. And so I think, you know, we've had a whole week of just preparing on what we expect to see from them formation-wise. And at the same time, you know, I think we just have to, you know, focus on what we've done best leading up to this this game. And, you know, I think it's going to be playoff games, no matter how well you've done against teams in the regular season. It's going to be a grind, and it's going to be, I think it's going to be a close game. And so it's just going to be that bit of detail that's going to push us over the edge.
Wanted to take a trip down memory lane to 2014. It was an amazing season for you. It was an amazing season for the Revs in general. It was a tough MLS Cup final loss to the Galaxy. But I wonder if you found any similarities between that squad in 2014 and this current team you've got now, Lee, in terms of maybe mentality and makeup.
Yeah, I think it's great. You know, we still have a lot of guys from the 2014 squad here. You know, we have guys that have been in these situations, big moments, and, you know, in these playoff games, you know, you need those experiences. And it's good to know that we have guys that you know, have experiences in big game moments and have played in such games. And so I think that will help us, you know, to settle our nerves early on in the game and then hopefully propel us far into the postseason.
I'm curious, one of the big changes at the club was Bruce Arena taking over. You know, you worked in the earlier years, the Heaps years and Mike Burns, and that was the group running the club. Now Bruce Arena taking over both, you know, in front office and as coach. What's changed in the club over the course of these last few years? Do you see a marked difference or an effect he's had, not just on the field, but maybe in the way the New England Revolution are?
Yeah, I think, you know, Bruce has had experiences with big teams and has also won a lot of trophies at the clubs he's been at. And so, you know, he brings that culture, that winning mentality, and that's what he's trying to establish here. And he's trying to build a team like you saw what he built in LA. And so he's trying to do that here. And, you know, I think this is his second year in charge, and you can already see the growth that this team has. You know, I think, you know, the faith of this club is in good hands with him. And it's going to be great to see what this team's going to look like in years to come. But he's built a team that can compete for the MLS Cup now, too, as well. And that's what we're looking to do this year.
So I want to ask you about another club first before we continue on about the Revs. You played in Miami to start the year. They're in the postseason as well, somewhat surprisingly, maybe down at the end. I was curious from your point of view now, looking back a few months later, what do you make of your time in Miami? What maybe went wrong? How do you see that club as a guy who's seen so much in MLS and now this new group? How are they building?
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed my time there. Met a lot of great guys, you know, and then, you know, and they have great ownership, and you know, they're gonna do. I feel like they're gonna do well because, you know, they have all the pieces in place, and so you know, it's just trying to find that balance, and you know, unfortunately, you know, I wasn't, you know, in the plans, I felt like. And so that's why I asked for a trade when I was there. But, you know, I think you know, obviously it's their first year as an expansion club, and it's going to take a bit of time maybe to try to figure out what works and what doesn't. But, you know, coming into this league it's not easy to do well right away. So, you know, I think trying to figure it out, figure out this league, figure out the balance, it's not easy. And so, but credit to them, they were able to grind it out and make it into the postseason. I'll be excited to see how they fare against Nashville.
So I'm interested by something you said, which was, you know, that experience, taking the time to get to know the league a little. Their postseason game against Nashville, a lot of people are putting up as the expansion team that went out and got international players versus the expansion team that basically double, triple down on MLS experience. And of course, you were part of LAFC as well. So you've been around this league a while. You've seen different groups build. What do you make of what's unique about this league? What makes it hard to win in this league? And how maybe experience is valued? Because a lot of teams, it seems like, you know, move away from veterans and go out and get a 20-year-old Ecuadorian, 20-year-old Panamanian, and then don't understand when things go wrong. What do you make of the way MLS experience is valued?
Yeah, I mean, you look at all the clubs that have won MLS Cup and have done well year in, year out. You look at Seattle, LAFC, Toronto, like all these guys that have a core vet group who have experiences in the league for a long time. And, you know, it's like you said, like it's not, this isn't an easy league. You're not going to, you know, it's hard to put streaks together. And so, you know, when things go wrong, you need to have a good locker room and someone that's going to help keep the group together. Because, you know, the traveling, the amount of games, it's different than anywhere else in the world. And so, it's you know, you have to have the coach that knows the league, knows the players, and in order to have that right balance. But you know, it's something that, you know, I'm not gonna say there's a right or wrong way, but we will, you know, it would be interesting to see, like, how, let's see how far Nashville and Miami go the first year. And then, like you said, those are two opposite way of building a team, and that's very interesting that you said that. And obviously in the first year, you saw Nashville was a little bit more stable, you know, and then Miami grinded it out to the last day. But, you know, now we're in the postseason and it's all about this one game. So yeah, we'll see. But that is the beauty of MLS.
Lee, I kind of want to ask you if we could zoom out a bit just on on the league in 2020. And if you had a vote for MVP, who do you think was the MVP for the league this year?
Man, for me, MVP of the league this year, I would, you know, I would have to say I like what Diego Rossi has done, and how far he's grown, and being more of a leader this year and winning the Golden Boot. I thought that was impressive to see him do that without much of Carlos alongside him this year. And you know, for me, I also think Andre Blake deserves a shout. You rarely get to see someone, you know, in the defensive end get a shout, but he's done so well to keep them in games throughout this season, and look where they're at right now. And so, you know, I think he deserves a shout as well.
Got to start with your boy Diego, though. You went to LAFC first. I appreciate that. But I'm curious, though, sticking on that just for one more minute. What do you think his ceiling is? Like, is this a guy, you were over in Europe, you know what it's like there. Is this a guy who now in Uruguay will start in a World Cup, will play in Champions League?
Yeah, I think, he's a young player. He still has a lot of growth. I remember when I was playing in Europe and at 20, you know, 21 and 22, and you're still learning a lot. And you're still growing your game, not just tactically, but technically. And so, you know, I think what's impressed me about him is when I first started playing with him is, obviously you recognize his engine. That's a non-given, but I think his composure in front of goal has grown in the last 2-3 seasons, and you know, he's starting to finish chances. I mean, this guy gets a lot of chances, but you know, he would normally finish one or two, but now you're starting to see the chances he getting. He's converting at a higher percentage, and so you know, I think that comes with experience, that comes with maturity, and you know, and it's only going to get better with you know, the players that he plays with and the players that you surround him with. And yeah, I think if he goes over to Europe, I mean, I compare him to, like, you know, the guy from Brazil, the AC Milan, played at AC Milan. What's his name? Pato.
Yeah, Alexandre Pato.
Yeah. Alexandre. I see his game is a little similar to that. Yeah, I mean, that guy did well over there, and I see him something similar like that kind of style.
All right, let's close you out on your current squad, New England Revolution. We asked about specifics with Montreal, but big picture, how far can this team go? What's the conversation in the group right now about the next month coming forward? What's the expectations, what should be for the New England Revolution?
Yeah, I mean, it's obvious inside the locker room that we want to win MLS Cup, and then, you know, this is what we, you know, we want it to, you know, to bring for the city of New England, or for this, you know, and so that's our goal at the end of the day. We, you know, we want to, but we know that, you know, we have to set our sights one game at a time, and you know, we don't try to look ahead into who do we play after we beat Montreal. So you know, the guys that have been here before, and then we, you know, the year that we made it to the finals, we no one expected us to make it to the finals, and you know, at the same time, we weren't even thinking about it. We were thinking about winning our playoff, you know, leg, and then on to the next one, and you know, and then long before that, you realize that you're in the conference finals, and if you win this game tonight, you're in the MLS Cup. And so I think, you know, our focus needs to be on Montreal right now and winning that game. And you know, like I said, it's just one game at a time, and that's what's, you know, great about the postseason now. It's just one game, and that's it. And it don't matter what your record was against the team during the regular season, you just have to beat them this one time. And so we beat Montreal, and that's what, you know, who knows after that.
Lee, thanks for the time, man. Good luck on Friday.
Yes, thank you. Appreciate it, guys.
Thanks, Lee.
Yeah, thanks to Lee Nguyen of New England Revolution. They're taking on Montreal November 20th, 6:30 p.m. Eastern. After the break, we'll talk the rest of the MLS playoff picture. Welcome back to A Football Podcast. The MLS playoffs are coming at us very quick with the play-in games on Friday. Nick, hit us up with your questions.
Thanks, Devang. First, we're going to go to the play-in round games in the East. And we start New England versus Montreal and Nashville versus Inter Miami. Who do you guys like going through to the playoffs?
This isn't just extreme bias because Lee was just on the show and I'm from Toronto and I'm disposed to dislike Montreal, but I like the Revs in this matchup. I know home field isn't a big deal, but I feel like New England is comfortable at Gillette. And I think this is a playoff team. I think Lee hinted at it in terms of the makeup of the squad. There are some holdovers from the teams that made deep playoff runs. And Montreal, to me, has been way too inconsistent to really have any sort of faith in them in the play-in game. And then I like Nashville just based on defensive solidity alone. I think that is a game, though, where someone like a Matuidi or Higuain could maybe turn it just on individual brilliance. But I like New England and Nashville to go through, David.
So I agree on New England. There's no reason to think Montreal will win this game. Something to point out, every MLS team can beat every MLS team. That's the reality. Yeah. I think in this conversation, though, the thought is, who are the teams that you think could win three or four games going forward? Montreal is not one of those. They don't have a good defensive base. They don't create a ton of opportunities. They don't have a lethal goal scorer who can get you chances. All the things that you're looking for in a playoff team, Montreal doesn't have. But they beat DC when we didn't expect them to. So it can always happen. But I agree with you. I think New England, you look at them on paper, They've got two good center backs now. They've got dangerous fullbacks. Carlos Heel is back. They've got Bo, who's a game changer. They've got Buxa, who's a DP center forward. And they've got a bunch of pieces around them, like Lee Wynn, like Diego Fagundes, who can create chances. So it all makes sense that they've been poor in defensive midfield and they've made some mistakes at the back. And that's kind of where it's hurt them. So I think this is a Revs team that I think we can look at and say, if they get hot, they can go all the way and beat anyone, but most likely they won't. But I think they have the advantage against Montreal. And on the flip side with the Miami-Nashville game, I think this is one of the most fascinating ones because Miami doesn't have Pizarro for this one. They don't create a ton of chances, but Nashville also doesn't dominate possession. So Miami's going to have the ball. It's just a question of if they can do anything with it.
Moving forward, the two teams that move on, do you think either of them would have any chance against Toronto or Philadelphia?
Yes. With Nashville, I think Nashville will beat Miami. They won't be out of any games because of the way they play, right? They're going to keep it close, keep it tight. They can throw numbers forward late in games with some size. Yonder Cadiz has added that to that as well. So they'll always be in every game because they'll be competitive. And then on the flip side with New England, I guess they've lost to Philadelphia a couple times, but Carlos Heel hadn't played all season and now was slowly getting himself back in. He might be their most important player and he's finally coming back now. So I think they have a chance to beat anyone as well, Devang, but my expectation is that Philly and Toronto will be the ones to move on.
Agreed. I have a little more faith in the Union. Not to say that I think Toronto's going to lose, but I think there is a bit of a blueprint out on how you can play TFC and be successful. And I think the Revs sort of did it the last time they played. Like, that was not a comfortable game for TFC. So that would be tricky. But overall, I think the two stronger teams in the East will be fine. It's funny, though, like TFC last year, regular season-wise, was not that impressive. And every playoff game was very tight. It turned on a few important moments like most big games do. But even though Toronto's had a better regular season, I think the playoffs are going to go the same for them. Like, there's not going to be a lot of daylight between them and their opponents, even if they have the higher seed.
Then we look to number four, Orlando versus number five, NYCFC. Who do you like in this one?
I think this is the game of the first round for me, and I've been pulled between both sides, to be honest. And I've liked a lot what Orlando has done, and that's been the story of the season for me. But NYCFC has gotten better with each week. And from the team that we saw at MLS's back that roughed up Toronto and kind of reminded us all that is a team to be reckoned with, I thought they've only really progressed since then. And I like their chances in this game, David, in a one-off against an Orlando team with maybe they breathe out a bit, maybe they puff out their chest, like, we made it, we got in finally, we got in as a 4 seed. I don't know if that changes anything for them.
I like Orlando. I think I understand what you're saying, but I think what they showed in MLS's back for Orlando was they came out, they played strong in the group stage, and then they got stronger as the tournament went along. They never let up. Then they come into the regular season and they did the same thing. So I think they've continued to push. And the other thing about them is so many players on that team can change the game for them. So if you come into a postseason and Mueller has a bad game, Nani has a bad game, it could be Pereira, it could be DK. They just have so many pieces and it feels like their back line's getting even healthier now that I like this Orlando group to beat anyone. I'm not picking them to go to MLS Cup, but I wouldn't be surprised. And so I think this is one of the most interesting groups. I agree with you in terms of the matchup as well, because NYCFC, a similar thing. They've got a lot of options. They've got depth. They've got a lot of pieces. It just feels like if Tati Castellanos isn't on with no Eber, where do the goals come from? And Castellanos has shown, like last year against Toronto, that he isn't really ready yet to carry a team in a big moment. And so I'd put my money on this Orlando side.
Rounding out the East, it's Columbus and New York Red Bulls. Can Columbus easily get past New York?
I don't think it'll be easy. This is a Red Bulls team that doesn't have as much talent as they've had in the past, but they've started to play their style again. They've started to get super aggressive. They've been a lot more fun to watch over the last few weeks, and that's played into the skill set of their players and kind of into their ethos. So this is a game where they go in, nothing to lose. They're going to try and win 1v1 battles. They're going to try and press Columbus and make the game uncomfortable. And this is a Columbus team that I think, man for man, is as talented as everyone in MLS. But depending when the game doesn't go the way they want it, they kind of just stick to it rather than changing what they do. And they have players in Nagby and Zellerán who can still get it done. It doesn't change. They don't react really to what the other teams do to them. So there's a chance Red Bulls could win this one.
I'm super curious about this because this rigidity is something that we've seen from Caleb Porter's side, and injuries have also been a problem for them. So it's one thing to be rigid, but if you're rigid with your best 11, that can be effective, and maybe it's less reason to criticize. So I'm curious, with a full complement of players with him, that kind of stick-to-itiveness that Porter's going to display tactically, maybe it works. But that's always troubling for me, especially I think the best managers in MLS have shown that there has to be a flexibility, especially in a league that sometimes halves can feel like different games entirely. So it's bold, and I kind of admire the dedication to the bit from Caleb Porter, but it is a danger thing in the playoffs. They should get by the Red Bulls, though.
I just wanted to update everyone. Live update. Gio Reyna, first international goal. He plays for Dortmund. Oh. Young player of the year in Europe. Type stuff. Blah, blah, blah. 1-1. Let's go, boys! Bah! The funny thing is, I'm not that big of a smack talker because I grew up rooting for teams that are awful. And I went with it at the beginning of the show, and then I got slammed in my face. So now I need the comeback. Continue.
All right. We're going to move out west now. Sporting KC versus San Jose, 1-8. Peter Vermees said that SKC is the number one seed for a reason. Do you agree with his sentiment?
is the reason because of the schedule? Then yeah, because of the season. Yeah, I think that makes sense. For a reason of that reason, yeah, I admire it though, eh, David. It's bold.
If you have to say it, then it's not true, right? If you have to explain when you are number one that you deserve to be number one, you've already lost.
To smack it down, as Dwayne Johnson once said, I'm not going to disparage the West entirely as a whole label, as an entity, as a group, but SKC is a fake number one seed in my mind. I think there's a group of four teams in the West, five teams, sorry, that I think any team has a legit viable path to the final. SKC should beat San Jose, though, David, right? Jose, I mean, the fact that San Jose is almost like a roll of the dice anytime you see them adds an intriguing element, but you expect SKC to lock it down at home with no fans even?
This game's going to be super entertaining, but I agree with you. I think San Jose are the worst team in the postseason, even as bad as Inter Miami have been for stretches, and Montreal as well. So this should be a winnable game. SKC... that's fine. They're number one in the West. You mentioned that 4-5 team group. I think the knock on the West is every team could win it outside of San Jose because no team is dominant. No team is as good as the top four teams in the East. So that's kind of where you're standing, but it makes it super entertaining at the same time, because I don't think there's any obvious answers to who wins, who doesn't. USA up 2-1. You're welcome. And on top of that, I think it makes each matchup super competitive.
I'm going to have to delete my Armando Cooper tweet, aren't I? Damn it. Damn it.
Let's go.
We go on to Minnesota, Colorado. Do you think Colorado's hot end to the season push their momentum further into the postseason?
I think this is a fascinating matchup. Minnesota's the team maybe that's going to be hurt the most by these international losses. They're going to miss Jan Gregoš. They're going to miss Robin Lode, who's been really big for them, and Roman Mentaner, who's a huge part of the way they structure their attack. And so and Kai Kamara. So not only are you missing those guys, but then all of a sudden it's like, well, we have versatile pieces in Marlon Hairston and Asani Dotson and Ja'Cory Hayes. But now you've got to fill every hole. How do you set the whole thing up? And then on the flip side, you've got a Rapids team that I think you could see that there was rust when they came back from their COVID-19 layoff, but then maybe more energy after that because they hadn't played as many games. So it'll be interesting to see how do they handle now this layoff and where is their team at. I like the way Colorado's been playing. And I think that there's a clear path forward here, Devang, in terms of the Rapids being able to dominate possession, being able to get their fullbacks a little bit higher against the Minnesota team that will sit deeper, and then they're able to create opportunities.
Breaking out a new feature, my blades of positivity, you know, grass blades of grass on the soccer pitch. I'm going to give the Rapids 8 blades out of 10 on my positivity chart.
What is happening right now?
Wait, this wasn't part of the notes. Where is this? Now we're doing blades? Oh my
God. 8 blades out of 10 in terms of positivity for the Rapids. I like this team a lot. In fact, foreshadowing a bit to what I'm predicting in the predictions part of this playoff preview, I like Colorado to go very deep in this playoff run. I think the Rubio part of not having him is going to be tough, and the fact that this international thing happened, which again, my God, but Shinyashiki's interesting. I feel like he could probably do the job as the nine for them. Goals will be an issue, and I think that's really my only concern. And it seems funny to say that about a team. I'm like, I think they're going to do well in the playoffs, but if they can find some scrappy, nasty goals, which I think they have the ability to do, I like this team to make a run.
There's a team they always need to score off set pieces, because even Diego Rubio, he's more of a creator than a finisher at that center forward position. He normally does it for those wingers, Cole Bassett, Kellen Acosta making the runs deep from midfield. But I agree with you. This is always a team that needs to get a goal or two from a weird spot in a different way. But if they're able to do that, when they get confident, they are such a different team. Like when they beat Seattle at home, I think they walked all over San Jose right before the COVID layoff. They got a win in Minnesota as well. In those games, you see that it's because it's a young team. When they're confident, they're a whole different group. And I think they're going into these playoffs with a lot of belief in themselves. And I think they've learned some lessons from the MLS's back tournament. Thought that tournament, they came out flat and they kind of got, kicked in the mouth and didn't know how to react, and maybe expected that teams were going to lay down for them because they accomplished so much last year at the end of the year. And so now I think this is a young group that's learned from that.
We move on to Portland versus FC Dallas. Will injuries limit the Timbers' ability to move on?
Yeah, this was a team for the Portland Timbers that to me would have been in a class with Seattle as the two best teams in the West, but not without Sebastian Blanco, and then now even more with Neash Gota going out as well. Sounds like Jeremy Obobese will be back, which is huge because I think he's more useful as a center forward than Felipe Mora, who's purely just an in-the-box finisher. So if he's not doing that, he doesn't do anything else. And the way Portland's going to have to play is sit back and try and counter through Valeri and through Yimichara, and Obobese fits that style as well. So this is a Timbers team that if they were in MLS Cup, it wouldn't shock me. And if Dallas beats them here, wouldn't shock me either, Devang.
So Dallas, another team that struggles to score. I think they had a good run in October against Miami and Houston, but overall a team that can't really find the back of the net. So I'm leads me to believe that Portland can survive without the big guns in this game. But it's funny, I kind of got that same feeling I get in the Colorado-Minnesota game, where Dallas can probably sneak something away not on the pretty element. And if Portland is going to rely on that kind of counterattacking system without the stars, does it work? So I think this is more of a toss-up than perhaps we've been led to believe.
I agree with you, and I think Dallas, for them, there's a lot of elements. There's different ways they can win this game, but if they can get a big performance from Franco Jara, who they spent a bunch of money on to be this guy, the guy they didn't have last year as a, you know, a big game center forward, get you goals, that will be huge. And Andre Requarte, who's shown quality but hasn't had full 90-minute performances. But if this is a game where Portland's going to sit deep and counter, then this is a chance for a guy like Requarte, who wants a lot of possession, who wants time to pick his head up. He should be able to help you unlock a defense.
And finally, my personal favorite game that I'm excited to watch, Seattle versus LAFC. Do you guys think this is the most exciting match of the first round?
It is, and I feel like some prophecies have to be broken here, because everyone is picking Seattle. More people than I thought are picking Seattle to make it to MLS Cup final. And I get it. Like, they know what they're doing in the playoffs. One of the best attacking tridents or attacking groups in the league, if not the best. But LAFC, David, you know, I think you prepared enough Kool-Aid for me over the last few months that I think I drank too much. And now, with Carlos back, with Diego Rossi going, it's a toss-up, and I'd rather see LAFC get through this as a neutral, perhaps. I think it'd be better off for the tournament if LAFC gets through. But either way, I feel like it's a bit of a shame that we're going to lose one of these teams.
I agree with you. It makes it great in the first round. Like, we're getting a Western Conference Finals in the first round, hit the ground running. And I actually am very excited about all these matchups. I think we talked about it coming out of decision day, but you could feel that little something different when the games like really mattered for something that we've probably missed because it's just been such a weird year. For LAFC, it sounds like they're going to miss Diego Rossi and Brian Rodriguez for this game away with Uruguay. We already know Diego Palacios tested positive with Ecuador, so that's your starting left back, and Cienfuegos as well. Cifuentes out as well. So there's a lot of pieces missing. The big question mark is Carlos Vela. How healthy is he? If he is close to peak Carlos Vela, which is what I thought I saw for at least 35, if not more minutes against Portland, then this can be LAFC's game, because you know they're going to dominate possession anyway, because that's just the way they play soccer. Atuesta's healthy now. Marc-Anthony Kay's healthy now. So they've got all those pieces going. And Vela can be that cherry on top, that Trump piece in this game. But everything points Seattle in this one. And I'm picking Seattle as well. To me, they stand above in the Western Conference, above every team, because of their depth, because of their quality, because of their experience. And so every team in the West, you look at them and you say, this is one thing they're missing. And Seattle's the one that has nothing missing. And it would make sense for them to get through this one, which I think will be their toughest game until the Western Conference Finals, and then to get to MLS Cup.
All right, guys, here we go. Prediction time. You might be right. You might be wrong. Who knows? But you got to give me a pick. Who do you think wins it all? Maybe also who's runner up? We already know that David has made a bracket on the MLS Twitter account. So let us know. What do you think?
I'm not proud of my picks. Devang, I don't believe in them. I'm not confident in anything. I went chalk weirdly early, especially in the East. It just feels like those top four teams, maybe NYCFC or Orlando's the one, are so much better than the teams below them. And then I also, in the West, ended up with SKC in Seattle in a Western Conference Finals. And in that matchup, I really like Seattle. So I had Seattle going to MLS Cup Final. And I almost went again with the heavy Columbus picks like I did for MLS's back. But fool me once, fine. Fool me twice, probably fair. Three times would be embarrassing. So I went with Philly going for a double on this one.
Sensible. Hey, I can't throw stones at your glass house, even though I was about to. I was going to pick Philadelphia. I was going to pick NYCFC, actually. I was thinking long and hard about it, but wow. I'll stick with Toronto FC so I can still live in the city. And I generally think that if the health is there, they will get to the final. But I'm picking Colorado out of the West. That is my bold pick. It's Robin Fraser versus Greg Vanney. Winner coaches LA Galaxy next year.
Nick, what are your picks?
Oh my God, don't put me, you guys are the experts. Oh my God. Honestly, I think Philadelphia, just because of that momentum, the supporter shield, and I'm going to go with LAFC. That's my pick.
Let's go.
I want to see if they make it all the way. That'd be hilarious and amazing.
That's a bold pick. It would be, because you know it would end with Bob Bradley doing a press conference where he tells everyone else they're idiots and he's smarter than them.
See, I told you. Which
would be
it.
True. Yeah, but at that point, it would be fairly true. So
exactly. Yeah.
I'll take it.
That's it. Great job, guys. I believe in all your picks. I think everything's going to go right because everything is super predictable in the MLS.
USA up 3-1, so everything is already going
right.
Look
at that. We really talked trash earlier, Devang, and it flew up in our face.
Shouldn't have done it.
Flew too close to the sun. Hey, it happens.
When we return, we answer your questions on Ask AFB. Welcome back to a football podcast. It is now time for everyone's favorite mailbag segment, Ask AFP. Thanks to everyone who sent their questions this week. If you didn't get the chance to send in your own questions, just hop on Twitter and use the hashtag AskAFP and send them our way. The first question goes to Cameron, and he asks, if Chicago ended up making up the playoffs, would Berich be an MVP candidate?
It's a great question. Robert Berich has been one of the most underrated players because Chicago has struggled. They also had to move conferences and move schedules and all that stuff. So they've kind of been out of sight, out of mind for a lot of people. They've played some good soccer. Berich, 12 goals and an assist. He's been one of the best center forwards. I think we talked about it, Devang, when we first started the show in the summer of like, there are a few teams, it was going to MLS's back, who have a center forward that if they get hot, they can carry them. Berich was one of the guys we mentioned, and he ended up being the best center forward of all of this group of players that got brought in across the league, maybe Alan Pulido, but he hasn't played as much. It would be tough though. Berich, 12 goals, puts him right behind Diego Rossi, but Diego Rossi wasn't getting votes in MVP and he won the Golden Boot as a young, exciting player on a big market team. So I think it would have been tough for Berich to end up getting in the voting, but he would have been deserving to be in that conversation if he'd been able to pull Chicago into the postseason.
I think in the end, he worked out as kind of the dream signing if you're going after a middle prime player from Europe who ends up finishing second in the league in goals. It is true, though, David. Like, Chicago is a bit out of the picture, and that move to Soldier Field, I think if there was fans loud in the stadium, maybe that would have had a bigger pull effect in terms of realizing that the Fire are back and they're to be reckoned with. But if they had made the playoffs, I'm assuming Barrich would have done even more. So I feel like he would have definitely been in the top three.
Another MLS question. Actually, Tim asks, how can TFC adjust if they don't have Pablo Piatti ready to go?
It's a tough question. I think the question is, if Osorio and Marky Delgado can play, then you probably you pack that midfield. I know Greg's system is, it's about the wingers. It's about attacking the wings and the defenders' fullbacks. But I feel like you probably have to jam that midfield. There's just a lack of offensive output without Piatti there, David.
Yeah, well, the secret that he has now is Richie Larea, which he hasn't had in the past. Even when you have had Moro and Betashore at their best, I still think Larea is next level right now, 1v1 attacking. And then the other question is, what's the situation up top? Because if Josie's healthy, you can go Josie and Io, which is, I think, when they're at their best. And that kind of fills in the gap of not having Piatti, because then you throw Pozuelo on a wing, but give him license to roam. So there's options, and that's why they've been good this year. And that's why I think we already talked about it. Ollie Curtis thought has done a great job. The ability to have different options, where last year they went with Pozuelo as a false nine when Josie got hurt, and that was great. But you saw in the final, they didn't really have anything else. It was Tsubasa Endo. Can Benaze give you a moment of brilliance? Now this year, you've got a lot of different pieces that you can move around.
Tyler B. asks, would you rather play soccer in the snow in cold weather or in 100-degree heat? Also, you can decide if it's humid or dry heat. And follow up, which would you rather watch?
This is a fantastic question, Tyler. I am a cold weather person. I would always rather play in cold, and I go hat, gloves, short sleeves, shorts. So I'm just throwing that out there off the beat. But I'd rather watch people play in heat, probably, because even with them playing slow, I think the game's less affected than, you know, orange ball situation.
I was once like you, David. I appreciated the cold, and I think I would have chosen snow and cold weather maybe 3 or 4 years ago. But as I age rapidly, and I find myself getting colder and colder when it's not even that cold outside. Like, if it's 5 degrees outside, I'm beginning to shiver. So I think this is a sign of my decline, but also a sign that I should choose the 100-degree heat, sweat it out. I know, I'm shocked as well, but I'll go with that.
Love it. Matt V. asks, what's your favorite national team to watch that you're not affiliated with, where you lived or your backgrounds, whatnot? So it's got to be just neutral.
So I pick France. France, around the time I started really getting into soccer, it was like 98, 99, 2000. And that era of the French team, plus the fact that Thierry was there and the Arsenal connections, I found myself watching them a lot. And also, a lot of the players I liked came from the French team throughout the years, even now, right? So I think they'd probably be up there for me now, but that team is a bit tough to watch these days. Funny, they don't love Dominic anymore after he did what they wanted him to do.
But I will agree, like, just the comments from Paul Pogba over the week of how happy he is, how excited he is, how much they all love each other. I think the celebration after the World Cup at the Stade de France, or Parc des Princes, sorry, with, like, the parade and everyone singing the Conte song and the dancing and all that stuff. Like, yeah, France is an easy team to root for. For me, I'd say over the last 8 years, it's been Colombia. This James Rodriguez Cuadrado group with the atmosphere, the fans they have, being in New York City, there's a lot of neighborhoods that are heavy Colombian. And when I was at the 2014 World Cup, I ended up in Manaus, which is the closest city in Brazil to the Colombia border. And all the Colombians just showed up in Manaus to watch games at the like viewing stands, not going to any games. And so I've always been obsessed with this Colombia team. I still think maybe the best atmosphere of the 2018 World Cup was that Poland-Colombia game. And then James hits that 70-yard on-the-ground pass to Cuadrado for the goal. Like, they party, they're fun, they're creative, they're confident, their country's behind them, all the things you want to see. I would love to see this group in person, but who knows if we'll ever go to a soccer game again.
And finally, Muhammad asks, do you think Ryan Reynolds purchasing a soccer team means other Hollywood actors could buy teams as publicity stunts? I know that they're going to make a documentary about it. So what are your thoughts on this?
Who did Ryan Reynolds buy?
It's a fifth tier Welsh team. Yeah, Wrexham.
Oh. Wait, you got to love this. You Google Ryan Reynolds soccer and the first thing that comes up is MLSsoccer.com. Vancouver native and Whitecaps fan Ryan Reynolds buys Wrexham Football Club. Oh, man. That is shoehorned. One of the things I'll just say, we saw it with LAFC. Now you're seeing it with all these other groups. The like big thing is to get a celebrity to be a minority owner so that you don't have to push them to promote your team because they just do it themselves. Will Ferrell did it for LAFC. The new Angel City NWSL team basically is every celebrity from the planet. The thing star-studded, and it's amazing. Matthew McConaughey and Austin. So that's like the thing to do now.
I hope with Rob McElhenney's involvement that we get The Gang Buys a Soccer Club episode from It's Always Sunny. That is what I hope from this documentary project. But all, I mean, one of the many sad things have happened because of this pandemic or just general events is the troubles that lower league clubs are facing and money troubles and the fact that they're trying to figure out how to distribute this financial help equally. And if it takes some celebrities who are trying to do something else, but they help out the club survive and inject some cash, then let's do it. Like, I have no issue with that at all.
Should he have bought into Vancouver Whitecaps, though? That's clearly the question because he's such a huge fan.
Oh, I think he knows better to get involved right now in this disaster.
Steve Nash called him up and was like, dude, don't even touch.
Chill.
Have you ever been to Mallorca, though? It's sick.
Mallorca. Oh, wait. I can't do songs or else we'll get copyrighted. Just kidding. All right. Let's end on packs here. We have four cards that are somewhat noticeable. We got Marco Van Basten. We've had that already. We have Italian Giuseppe Signori.
Wow.
And then we have a Player of the Year shiny card. Enzo Schifo from Belgium. Is that how you pronounce his last name?
Yeah. Okay. Enzo Schifo was the great player in Belgian history before this generation. And they ended up, I think, 82. They went to a semifinal. Would those years be right? Or 84 would be the World Cup. So maybe 82 was Euros. But he was like the great player and Mark Wilmots as well later on. And now this Belgian team's the best team they've ever had besides Enzo's team.
Frank DeVore won a game. How about that? That's cool.
Yeah.
Hup Holland. On that cheery note, I was about to pile on FDB, but he got a win. So congrats, Frank.
Which, speaking of national teams we're not associated to, for a year and a half over the last 2 years, they were the most fun team in the world. And now Frank DeBoer ruined them in about 2 months.
Love the kits, too. I think they're up there, the Dutch, for me as well. Got some friends who like them as well, so I'm usually aware of what's going on with them. And it's a laugh a minute currently with FDB, so hopefully they get stuff together for the Euros. That's it, folks. Great episode. Thanks to Lee Nguyen for joining us. Good luck to him and the Revs against Montreal on Friday. A reminder, a rating or a review wherever you get this podcast would be awesome for us. It helps get this pod into more people's ears or on Twitter at @afootballpod, as well as Patreon, patreon.com/afootballpodcast. Getting closer to 30. Join us on the Discord and get this pod ad-free. For David, Nick, and myself, thank you so much for listening to AFP. We'll talk to you next week.